Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Go For It. I'm your host, Paul Gannon. For the next 2 hours, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And, of course, as always, you will get a heavy dose of my opinion. And if you have an opinion, number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgann. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgann. And you can send messages to the show on Twitter at GoForGant. And while you're there on Twitter, give me a follow at GoForGant. Big show lined up for you today. Expected to be joined by the newest member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame, the one, the only, Willie Rolfe. Last week he had his ceremony, enshrinement ceremony, and now it's official. He has the jacket, he has the bust, and now he is immortalized. So we're going to talk to Willie today, talk to him about that whole experience and everything. I mean, it had to be just a humbling experience for Willie to be involved in that particular situation, just to be involved in a Hall of Fame ceremony, to get the jacket, to get the recognition, to get the bust, and just pretty much to get everything that he deserved in his great career. And so we're going to talk to him about all those great things on here today. But I'm going to start in the National Basketball Association. More importantly, I don't know if it's more importantly or not, but the Dwight Mayor is finally over. Dwight Howard has finally, Superman has finally landed somewhere, and he landed in L.A. with the Los Angeles Lakers to join Steve Nash, to join Kobe Bryant, and for some strange reason, to be able to join Pau Gasol. I don't know how the Lakers were able to get Steve Nash and Dwight Howard this summer without giving up the services of Pau Gasol, an all-star power forward in Pau Gasol, one of the better power forwards in the game in Pau Gasol. I just don't know how you do it, but the Lakers find a way to get it done. Year in and year out, and the big man tradition in L.A. continues. It was Mikan, it was Jabbar, it was O'Neal, and now it is Dwight Howard. The tradition continues in L.A., the big man tradition like no other. There isn't a tradition like no other in the NFL, in the NBA, I should say, like the Laker big men. I mean, you get rid of O'Neal back in 2006, and then you have Bynum, you draft Bynum a couple years later, and then you had that, Bynum was keeping the tradition going somewhat, and then you trade Bynum, who's the second best center in the game, for the best center in the game, and Dwight Howard, and many argue that Bynum is the second best center in this game. But I'm going to say Dwight Howard, and I believe Dwight Howard can do just a little bit more than Andrew Bynum. But Andrew Bynum is coming. He's coming. My problem, my question with Andrew Bynum is what's going on upstairs and whether or not upstairs is going to be all right. And that's the only concern I think you have to have with Andrew Bynum and his health, because he's had some issues staying healthy, though he stayed healthy for the most part last season. But you look at this trade now. The Los Angeles Lakers. Excuse me, Los Angeles Lakers. Great summer for the Lakers. They go out in the second round to the Oklahoma City Thunder in a series that the Lakers could have easily won. I mean, the Lakers were in each and every in a lot of those ball games and gave away a few ball games, gave away game two, gave away game four. I mean, so the Lakers had many opportunities in that particular series. Now with Steve Nash, a guy who's still one of the best point guards in this game. A guy who can just dish the ball like no other. A guy who can run an offense like no other. You have an upgrade at the point guard position. Last year it was Ramon Sessions. This year, Steve Nash. upgrade. Last year you had Andrew Bynum. This year you have Dwight Howard. Upgrade. I mean, so, and they were so close to the Oklahoma City Thunder. I don't see how you cannot put the Lakers over the Thunder at this point. And the Thunder are still a formidable ball club. Let's be mindful of that. I mean, they're going to be there, and it's not a slam dunk that the Lakers are going to get back to the NBA Finals. It's not a slam dunk at all, actually. Because if you really look at it, the Oklahoma City Thunder are there. They can contend with the Lakers with their size, Ibaka, Kendrick Perkins. These guys can contend with the Lakers' size. The question will be now in terms of Westbrook and Durant. I mean, is the combination of Westbrook and Westbrook, Durant, and I guess Ibaka, and well, Westbrook, Durant, and Harden, is that better than Kobe, Nash, and Dwight Howard? Is that better? I think it's close. I think it's close, and I don't think we can automatically punch the Lakers' ticket to the NBA Finals. I can't do that. I won't do that. I think it would be irresponsible of anybody to do that at this point. Because the thing about it is this, the Oklahoma City Thunder still have a lot of talent on that roster. They still have arguably, what many could say, the best player in the game in Kevin Durant. I like to think LeBron is, but you can make the argument. But I see the Lakers now, and I say this team is going to be a tough team to contend with. This team is a lot better than they were a year ago. This team is at least the second-best team in the Western Conference. I can see that with the Lakers right now. Dwight Howard is an absolute beast. He is the best center in the game. He is a defensive force. He is a rebounding force. And his offensive game is evolving. And everybody says, yes, Bynum has a better post game. I would agree with that in terms of a pure post game, but it's almost like the argument many years ago they made about Shaq and Alonzo Mourning. Shaq, all he could do for many parts of his career, and he did it very well, and many people argued that all he could do was dunk, but Shaq over the years evolved. He got himself a jump hook, got himself a little turnaround. I mean, Shaq evolved his offensive game. Now, in terms of pure offensive games earlier in their careers, you could probably argue that Alonzo Mourning had a little more. But in terms of Shaq and his dominance, his ability to just dominate the game, even without having the traditional post moves, he was just powerful, and he overpowered you. And that's what Dwight Howard is doing at this part, in this stage of his game. He's developing a jump hook, trying to develop a little bank shot, and he's developing those things. But his offensive game is still, I don't want to say raw, but it's evolving. It's an evolving situation. It's an evolving game. His offense game is evolving at this point. But Dwight Howard in L.A. makes them a better team than Andrew Bynum in L.A. I think it does. Steve Nash in L.A. makes them a better team than Ramon Sessions in L.A. And I think that one of the biggest things about this whole thing is that the Lakers were still able to keep Pau Gasol. They were able to keep Pau Gasol. And that's big. That's big. You're talking about a big, still one of the better power forwards in this game, and the Lakers were still able to keep him. They were still able to keep Pau Gasol. Even they got Dwight Howard, even though they got Steve Nash, they still kept Pau Gasol. And that's big. And that's big. That's big. And I don't think anybody can argue that, how big that is. That's big. But at this point, let's talk about other parts of that trade. And a lot of people are contending that. And let's break down the trade for you, shall we? Let's break down this big trade, four-team trade. involving the Sixers, involving the Nuggets, involving the Lakers, and involving the Orlando Magic. And in this trade, a lot of people changed addresses in this trade. Aaron Aflalo, Al Harrington, Mo Harkless, Nikola Vucevic, and forward Josh McRoberts, Kristen Ayanga, they all go to the Lakers. Not the Lakers, they go to the Magic, excuse me. The Lakers get Howard, Chris Duhon, and Earl Clark, while the Philadelphia 76ers, my Philadelphia 76ers, my beloved Philadelphia 76ers, they do well here. They do well here. I'm going to talk about the Sixers in a moment, but they did well here. You get Andrew Bynum now. Now there's no guarantees that he will resign with the Sixers. There's no guarantee. But guess what? If he doesn't, he doesn't. You have an asset. You have a chip. And you have cap space even if he does walk away. But the Sixers did give up Andre Iguodala. He did go to Denver. And the Magic, they received some second-round picks and also three first-round picks, all conditional first-round picks, all lottery-protected first-round picks. So, I mean, you look at it, you thought the Magic probably could have got better deals out there. I mean, the Nets deal probably was a little better. Lopez, Humphreys, Marshawn Brooks, and some picks. You could argue Houston probably could have put together a better package. But I guess the Magic, at their point, their thing is, and I've called for the Magic to break this thing up. And this is an opportunity to get young players, to get caps, try to get some cap space, and try to get assets and draft picks. Break this thing up. And Rob Hennigan, the GM, he comes from that Greg Popovich, Sam Presti tree. He comes from that tree. He comes from that lineage. So, and you look how Sam Presti was able to build up the Oklahoma City Thunder. Sam Presti did a great job of building that franchise. He did it trading Ray Allen that one particular year. That he got Jeff Green. He got and they drafted well, and that was big. He drafted very well. I mean, he drafted very well. And in drafting very well, he was able to get some assets. He was able to get the Russell Westbrooks, the Serge Ibakas, the Kevin Durants of the world. And so they got the picks, the James Hardens as well. They got the picks, but the thing about it is Sam Presti did a great job of drafting. He did a great job of drafting. And they're a small market team, and when you're a small market team like Oklahoma City, you're going to have to draft well. Drafting well is going to be very important. And then once you draft well, you're going to have players buying into what you're doing. Kevin Durant bought in, and he resigned. Westbrook bought in, and he resigned. So this team drafted well. This team traded well. And this team, because of those things, was able to build a championship-caliber ball club. Because of that. Because of that. They were able to build their roster and turn their team into a championship caliber team. They were championship caliber. And that goes, hey, you got to give a lot of credit to Sam Presti for making that happen. You got to give him a lot of credit. And Ken Rob Hennigan, he's a part of that lineage, the Popovich lineage. He's a part of that. He's a part of that. And he built this team. He built this team. Presti did a great job of building this team. And he was a 30-year-old GM as well. He was a 30-year-old GM as well. And you look at how he did it. I mean, he traded players like Ray Allen, players like Rashard Lewis. And in doing so, and he hired a great coach in Scott Brooks. And so he did all these things, and he was able to draft Westbrook, draft Harden, draft Durant, draft Ibaka. And these guys are key pieces. Key pieces. He also drafted Jeff Green, and Jeff Green turned into Kendrick Perkins. key pieces. A lot of credit for what happened in Oklahoma City was because of Sam Presti. And you remember that Sonic team, before they became the Oklahoma City Thunder, that Sonic team, they were a team that got into the second round of the playoffs with Ray Allen and Jeff Green and those boys. Not Jeff Green, Ray Allen and with Ray Allen and Rashard Lewis and those guys, Chris Wilcox as well. They were able to. They were pretty much able with those guys. They were a second round team. They were a playoff team. Then Sam Presti came in and he decided to start building this thing. He decided to start building some things here. And he traded Ray Allen, traded Rashard Lewis, and all these things turned into some great things. Westbrook, Harden, Durant, Ibaka, these things came about because of what Sam Presti did. Sam Presti did a great job. But the question now is, you look at Sam Presti, you look at Rob Hennigan. Rob Hennigan coming from that family, that Popovich family, that Popovich lineage. He's coming from that group. Coming from there. Now, he broke this team down. A lot of people were very critical of this trade, and I thought the Magic could have got a little more too. I thought they could have got a little more, but they didn't. But he broke this team down. He broke this team down. Dwight Howard, he got that whole situation out, and he got some talent. Mo Harkless is a player that some people are very high on, young player out of St. John's. Vujicic from Philadelphia, young big man. He showed some signs last season, showed some promise. Josh McRoberts showed something. I mean, I don't know how much. Ayanga, he got some time. But he played some decent minutes in the playoffs. Aaron Aflalo, a guy that some people are very high on, a guy who has some talent, has some ability. I know the Nuggets were a little reluctant to give away Aflalo, but the Nuggets, they make out well here. Getting to Andre Iguodala, a guy that defends very well, a guy that's a jack of all trades. He can do a lot. He's a assist, rebounding, and I mean, it's his points. Andre Iguodala is not the purest scorer in the league, obviously, but he's a guy that can do it all. And you look at his numbers, he averaged 12 points. He was an all-star last year. He averaged 12 points last season, 5 assists and 6 boards. Andre Iguodala is that guy that can do it all. And he's going to flourish with the Denver Nuggets. He's going to flourish with George Karl in that up-tempo style in Denver. I mean, he's a wing player that can get out and explode and definitely can score on the break. I mean, he's a great player in transition, a big-time finisher, a big-time defender. I mean, as a Philadelphia 76ers fan, and Andre Iguodala for years has been getting a bad rap, as a Philadelphia 76ers fan, I would love to have kept Andre Iguodala. I would love to. But guess what? When you have an opportunity to get a 7-footer, the second-best center in the game, and Andrew Bynum, some argue the best center in the game, a guy that can do a lot of things, he's a difference maker. He's a game changer. Andre Iguodala is what he is. He can do a lot, but he is what he is. He is what he is. And the Sixers were going to be 7th or 8th seed each and every year with this current roster. And the way they were going to be a 7th and 8th seed each and every year. It is what it is. And I love what the Sixers organization did here because, yes, they got past the Chicago Bulls, but guess what? They wouldn't have got past the Chicago Bulls if Derrick Rose didn't get hurt. They wouldn't even got past Chicago Bulls, in my mind, if Joakim Noah wouldn't have got hurt. So the Sixers benefited from that particular situation. But they knew that. And they went out and they changed this roster. And Andrew Bynum is a big part of that. If he can stay healthy, if he can get his head right and keep his head on right, this is a great pickup. And if they don't re-sign him, it's worth the risk. I mean, I would love for Bynum to stay, but he may not stay. And that's the reality of this trade. But I think it's well worth the risk. Let's bring in now a guy now who last weekend was his weekend. Great time for him, I'm sure, and all the other Hall of Fame enshrinees. The one, the only, the great Willie Rofe. Willie, how are you, sir?
How you doing today? Now, it's worth the risk for him maybe not to sign an extension in his contract up after next year?
Andrew Bynum's contract is up after next season. And I mean,
and then Andre Iguodala have his best year shooting from the field, shooting threes. Was that his best year as a Sixer?
I know. He was his best. He had his All Star year, but that wasn't his best season. But it was his season because the Sixers.
Well, he was clutch this year. When have you seen Andre Iguodala be clutch? He was clutch.
He had a good season. But, I mean, if you have an opportunity, I mean, Andre Iguodala, with Andre Iguodala, the Sixers were no more six seed at best with Andre Iguodala. With Andrew Bynum now, you're talking about an opportunity. You might even get in that top four, maybe a third seed for the Philadelphia 76ers with Andrew Bynum. If he stays healthy, and Andrew Bynum has had a hard time staying healthy throughout the course of his career.
Exactly. So you train. So basically you train in a car that's got real good thread on the tires for a car that's got some bad tires. You don't know if they're going to hold up or not.
But he did play last season, all last season, and granted it was a shortened season, but I will say this. I mean, he's only 24 years old. He'll be 25 when the season starts, around the time the season starts. So, to me, I mean, a 24-year-old big man, 7-footer, who averaged a double-double last year, 18-11, I believe, might have been 18-12. But, I mean, when you have an opportunity to get a big man of that caliber, you have to make this deal. You have to take the risk.
And how old is that? How old is Andrew Iguodala? How long has he been in the league?
Iguodala right now is 28 years old. He's 28. Been in the league 8 seasons.
I think it's a good trade. I think it's an even trade. I think the team that came out at the short end of the stick on this trade is Orlando. But I think that's a decent trade. And I will say this. If Kobe and the Lakers had moved the ball to the other side of the court when Bynum was 8 for 15 or 9 for 15 in a lot of them games, he would average more than 18 to 10. But the problem with the Lakers is, late in games, Kobe was jacking up shots. And you know I live out here in California, and I saw James Worthy very upset during the year saying that the coach should have made Kobe get the ball inside a little more late in game situations when he's shooting 30% and he's just jacking up shots and not giving the ball to Bynum, who was dominating the basketball game. He can dominate a basketball game, and Kobe did not. And in the playoff game, we talked about this, Paul, when they were playing against Oklahoma. The Lakers could have won that series. They were up by 7 with 2 minutes left. But instead, they ran a pick and roll with Gasol instead of flipping it when it was fronting Bynum. Bynum's got to touch the ball late in the game. I mean, he was your best. Like you said, when Rich Carl was hurt, he was the best low post player last year because Dwight Howard was hurt, and he wasn't getting enough touches late in the game.
Well, in terms of pure low post skills, I think he has more pure low post skills than Dwight Howard. Dwight Howard is obviously more of a force in terms of his power.
Well, he's a lot
to
more athletic.
Basketball. But in terms of just force, I would say Dwight Howard, but in terms of just pure post skills, I would have to say Andrew Bynum is better. And Dwight Howard.
Yeah, but he's not a better defender. He's not a better
defender.
He's not as athletic as Dwight Howard. Dwight Howard is a big man that moves like he's a power forward. He doesn't move like
a
center.
Definitely. He's very nimble, Dwight Howard. And, I mean, he is in L.A. And to your point now, I mean, you have Steve Nash there. Steve Nash, and you talked about how they weren't getting the ball inside to Bynum enough down the stretch. You have Steve Nash there in the mix. Maybe that changes now. A guy that Kobe, in terms of pure point guard, may respect and may respect his decision making down the stretch and give him the ball and let him have the ball in those situations.
Well,
and get the ball inside to Bynum, not Bynum, Dwight Howard down to Saul as well.
Is this going to become an issue, Paul? Because Kobe's not going to get as many touches with these guys. He's not going to get as many touches as he did before. So is that going to become an issue because he's not getting the touches? Dwight's going to want his touches. Steve's going to kick it outside. I mean, Kobe's not going to get – I think he's going to get his share, but with Steve Nash, he's not going to get as many touches in the offense.
Right. I mean, Kobe's going to have to adjust his game, and – I mean, I don't want to make too much of this Olympics, but looking at Kobe during these Olympics, it seemed like he's just been playing in spurts. And it's kind of hard to gauge because a lot of these guys are all these guys are superstars on their teams, so everybody has to change their game a little bit. But it seems like Kobe is struggling a little bit in these Olympics. And is it a possibility? I mean, Kobe is not the same Kobe, but I mean, we'll see how much he has left. I mean, I think he's going to have to turn it over to Steve Nash a little more. He's going to have to do it.
Well, he already said he's only playing 2 more years. He's got 2 more years left on his contract, and he said he's done at 35. I take Kobe for his word. I mean, Kobe's not going to – Kobe, he already said, I'm not going to go out there and average 17 and 18 points. He already said he's not going to have, you know, 15, 6, whatever, guys do when they get older. He can't let himself do that, and I respect him for that. So, you know, he's got 2 years left on his deal, and he said he's going to retire at 35. So I take him for what he says.
We'll see. I mean, we'll see. But the Lakers – are definitely in good position here. I'm not saying they have surpassed OKC. I'm not saying that, but I think at this point, I think they are better than OKC, but I can't say that it's a slam dunk that they will get to the NBA Finals because Oklahoma City, they still have a lot of great pieces, and they still have size themselves. I mean, they have good size.
And one thing you know you're missing out on, Paul, they still got those young legs, and at the end of the day, other than Dwight Howard, Kobe Bryant's 33, 34. Steve Nash is 38. Somebody's got to guard Westbrook. Have they signed Sessions? Did they sign Sessions back?
Sessions is gone. Sessions is gone.
Where'd he go?
I think Sessions went to, I want to say Houston.
Well, if you don't have Sessions, who you going to have backing up Steve Nash? You got Blake.
You do have Blake, but I mean,
That's it at the point.
That is at the point.
I don't know about that.
Sessions went to the Bobcats. He went to the Charlotte Bobcats.
I don't know about that, then. How do you think the guards go? Who's gonna go on Westbrook?
And that's going to be key.
Who's gonna go on James Harris in Westbrook? I mean, the backcourt's gonna become an issue. The backcourt's going to become an issue when they play against good teams again because Steve Nash can't guard anybody.
And that's going to be the thing. I mean, I'm not saying it's a slant. I mean, the Lakers are – I would put it this way. The Lakers are there with the Oklahoma City Thunder. I'm not saying they're better, but they're there. And I know a lot of people at this point are really, you know, saying the Lakers have surpassed the Thunder. They're there. But, I mean, in terms of the matchups you're talking about, you're right. But let's be real.
The best thing they did, they kept Gasol. So they got 2 7-footers. So the best thing they did, because Gasol can play with a 7-footer postman because he can stay outside. So I think Dwight Howard and Gasol will be able to play off each other. That's the best thing they did was keep Gasol in this deal. But other than that, as far as if you're telling me in the backcourt they just got Steve Blake and Steve Nash, I think that catches up with him at some point. Do you agree?
I will say that I would agree with that, but the thing about it, who really in this league can stay in front of Russell Westbrook? There's not many who can stay in front of him. So, I mean, I just to your point, I do understand your point. I think it's a legitimate point. But my point is, who really can stay in front of Russell Westbrook?
Well, that was the problem, another problem in the playoffs. Late in the game, they had Blake out there, and they didn't have and I didn't understand why Sessions wasn't in the game. Because Blake sure can't stay in front of him. Sessions is quick. He's a good athlete.
Yeah,
I think he's got a better chance of staying in front of him than Steve Blake did. I didn't understand what Mike's round coaching decisions in that series, which I questioned some of Mike Brown coaching decisions when he was coaching LeBron in Cleveland. You know, some of those decisions just don't really make any sense to me. Why would you have Steve Blake in the game, late in the game, when I want to have the best defender that I think they can keep up with him, and between Steve Blake and Sessions, it's Sessions.
Right. No, I would agree with you, but my contention is no one really can stay in front of Russell Westbrook anyway. Steve Nash is who he is. He's never been a big-time defender.
And Steve Nash has been laid over there. Another thing about Steve Nash, We've seen him laid over there. I know he's in great shape, but we've seen him laid over there too, icing his back and move. You know, he is another one that, you know, like you said, I think the Lakers are basically on the 2-year plan with these guys, and after the 2-year plan, you know, I think Blake and Kobe retire, and then they rebuild. So if that's what we're saying. We're saying that they're trying to get – everybody's talking about Kobe wants his 6th ring to be like Jordan. Even if he gets 6 rings, he's not Michael Jordan. And that's what I think Kobe wants to do. He just wants to get 6 rings so he can say he got 6 like Jordan. But you can't compare Kobe to Jordan. So that's fine if he gets his 6 rings. But basically what you're telling me is they're on a 2-year plan and then they're rebuilding.
Well, I mean, and basically, you look at it from Dwight Howard's standpoint, I think he's doing the right thing by not signing the extension with the Lakers. For the simple fact is, this team, this could be a beautiful thing, but also it could backfire. I mean, Kobe could get old real fast, and Steve Nash could get old real fast. And if that happens, then Dwight Howard does have an out and does have an opportunity to go where he wants to go. That could be Brooklyn. I know Brooklyn, their cap situation may not be ideal, but
no. I think because they can offer him so much more money than anybody, he won't leave L.A. And he knows if he's in L.A., L.A. is going to put a good product on the court, and they're going to be able to attract some key free agents. Which, you know, he got some guys in Orlando, but you don't have to worry about getting some star players to come play in L.A. So I think his contract's up after this year. He's got to sign an extension before the 2-year period. So, I mean, his contract's up this year. They're going to be looking to sign him to a long-term deal after this year. And he does play for other than the Boston Celtics, the most storied franchise in the NBA. So the Lakers will put a product on the field that will always be competitive because they're the L.A. Lakers.
And the Lakers have done that too. I mean, look at all these big men they've had over the years. They've always found a way, even after Shaq, they got Bynum. I mean, they always found a way to have that dominant big man. And you talked about Kobe and the Jordan comparison, and I would agree with you on that point because a lot of people don't realize Shaq was the dominant force in a lot of those championships. Kobe was Robin in a lot of those championships.
And
so,
Kobe doesn't like that, and he still doesn't like that.
But it's true. You know,
it
he doesn't
true.
Like it. But I mean,
yeah,
but
somebody with Laker fans, then when you say that, they'll say, well, Shaq was a dominant force, but late in the game, it was Kobe doing the score, and Shaq was getting fouled. So then that's how they flip it on that. They'll say, yeah, Shaq averaged his numbers, and he averaged 30 or 27 and 215 or 12, but late in the game, it was Hackershack back there. So they said Kobe was the one finishing those series because Shaq couldn't play in the game. So they'll flip it into whatever way to make Kobe look like Kobe was the man.
But for those years there, for a period of time, Shaq was just unguardable, just unstoppable.
The most dominant player in
the
NBA.
Free throws.
The most dominant player in the NBA other than free throws.
Definitely. Definitely. And so, I mean, Kobe, like you said, to your point, Kobe will never be Jordan. As far as I'm concerned, I don't care how many championships he wins. He will never be Michael Jordan.
And didn't Kobe? If we don't, and you know what I tell them too, Paul? Didn't we see Kobe last year against Oklahoma City do something? I said the only year when Michael Jordan, I'm saying, I know when he's younger had those battles, but when he got older, the only year you saw Michael Jordan come back when he came back when he came back in the door at the end of that season. In 95, whatever, before he came back in 96, and against Indiana and against the Magic, he turned the ball over and had some bad plays in there. And we're like, man, if that Jordan is having those bad plays and all that stuff, that was before he went and made the movie and played a lot of basketball. But that's when you questioned Jordan a little bit until he came back and won 3 in the year. But Kobe's been playing nothing but basketball, and he made some bad plays down the stretch last year in the playoffs. And if we're not going to forget about that Phoenix series a few years ago when he basically just – they were getting beat, but he just checked out. You know, he checked out against Phoenix a couple of years ago, and he made some bad plays down the stretch in that playoff series – against Oklahoma City that you don't think you would see a veteran Kobe Bryant make, because Michael Jordan wouldn't have made those mistakes.
And also, you remember back in 2010 against the Boston Celtics in that Game 7, Kobe wasn't that good there. He was 6-for-24 from the field in that particular game. Granted, he did some other things in terms of rebounding and those type of things, but he wasn't very good in that Game 7. Pau Gasol was the guy who got it done in that Game 7 against the Boston Celtics two seasons ago. So he's not Jordan. We all know that. He'll never be Jordan. And,
but he is a great player. He is top 10.
He is.
What, do you have him in the top 10 all time?
All time, top 10? I think probably when it's all said and done, I think you have to, yes. When it's all said and done, I think you have to, yes. I think he's going to be he might be the closest that we will get to Jordan. But granted, there probably will be another Jordan that comes around. I don't know when it's going to happen. I don't even know if he's born. I don't know if he's here. I don't know if he's in the league now. I mean, is LeBron
going
to be
now.
That guy?
No, LeBron's not a Jordan. He's more of a facilitator, so LeBron's not really a Jordan, though. You know, I mean, Kobe is a scorer. Jordan was a scorer. I think Jordan made guys better or got more guys involved, probably a little better than Kobe. But Kobe's a scorer. And so LeBron's more of a facilitator. So you really can't – what LeBron did, he showed you in those finals last year. LeBron can dish and get everybody involved. Mike Miller had a great game. LeBron makes people better, but he's got to have the right the people to be able to finish it, and then he'll pick his spots. But, you know, LeBron – did exactly what LeBron did last year, and I mean, he's a guy that can average, you know, 30, you know, 25 and 10 and 12 and have 5-6 dimes. So, you know, he kind of fills up the stat sheet.
But could it be LeBron? I mean, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but LeBron could go down as the best of both worlds, and I mean that the best of Magic and the best of Michael. I mean, he has that ability to the passing ability of Magic and I'm not saying he is Magic in terms of his passing ability, but it's close. And he's not obviously the scorer that Michael Jordan is, but he can score. So, I mean, if he can somehow, I mean, and it's always a possibility, if he can somehow win 6, maybe 7 championships.
I'm not going to say 6. I'm going to say win. If he can somehow win 3 or 4. Then you have to put him in that category. It's not going to be – I think at this point in his career, it's going to be hard for him to win 6 or 7 because he's only got 1 right now. I mean, it could happen. But I think – let's be more realistic. Can he get 3 or 4 rings? Yes, he can get 3 or 4. But the 6 or 7 thing is stretching a little bit.
And will LeBron win another championship?
They have a great chance to win another championship this year.
I mean, you got that thing in Oklahoma City. I mean,
you got a healthy Dwayne Wade coming back next year. You got a Dwayne Wade that was getting his knee drained most of last year, and they still won. And Dwayne's picked the spots. If you got Bosh coming back next year healthy, and you got Dwayne Wade healthy with Ray Allen out there on the court, It could get ugly.
And I mean, an NBA season is obviously months away, but I mean, it's shaping up. A lot of great storylines. Oklahoma City is going to be there, obviously. Can't discount the Spurs. I mean, the Clippers as well. They did some great things in this offseason. The Lakers, of course, with the addition of Dwight Howard.
It's going to take a veteran team to beat Miami. It's going to take a veteran team to beat Miami. Can a veteran team slow Miami down? So, I mean, that's going to be the issue. Can a veteran team slow them down? But right now with Chicago, with the situation they're in, they lost a couple. I mean, I don't know what Chicago is thinking about. You got Rose coming off a knee injury. You let C.J. Watson go. You lost your big backup center. You let Roddy Moore, who was playing good ball, go. I mean, you still got Boozer there. Why would you break up your bench when your bench was the key to your success last year, and you break up your bench?
I don't understand.
And C.J. Watson played he was their main player last year.
But they were able to bring back Kirk Heinrich, and that's a good addition. They did bring in Nate Robinson as well. But a Sheik,
you telling me C.J. Watson wasn't part of that team?
Who, a Sheik?
C.J. Watson.
Oh, C.J. Watson was a big part of that team. I like what C.J. Watson did. He played a lot of great minutes for that ball club last season. But
he was a main option. He was a number option when Rose got hurt most of the game.
But I'll argue that Kirk Heinrich is an upgrade.
Okay. All right. Well, if it ain't broke, why fix it? I mean, you lost a Seek. You let Ronnie Brook came off the bench and gave him great minutes last year. Scored a little bit, rebounded defense. I don't understand it.
In terms of a Sheik, he had a similar deal like Jeremy Lin, where that third year was crazy.
I understand a Sheik. I'm talking about some of the rest of the guys, pieces they let go.
I'm okay with C.J. Watson. I mean, Ronnie Brewer, I mean, solid defender, solid player, but replaceable. He's a replaceable guy. I think Chicago, without Derrick Rose, they're talking, what, January he's going to come back. Chicago may struggle early on. And this is a team that may be in a situation where they're a lower-seeded team. It's a team that could surprise somebody in the playoffs because of being a lower-seeded team.
Okay, so why would you let your main school? What was Heinrich at last year?
Heinrich was in Atlanta.
I don't remember hearing Heinrich fired up. He wasn't scoring a lot of points in Atlanta.
I know
from what C.J. Watson was doing.
No, C.J. Watts had a good year. I mean, there's no doubt about it. But
so if he's your main option and you're saying that Rose won't be back till January, why do you let him go then? He already knows your system. He's already been there.
I mean, then you get a Kirk Heinrich. You also get a Nate Robinson, a guy who can fill it up for you.
Oh, my God.
Nate
Now you got Nate Robinson to join him. You telling me he better than C.J. Watts?
I would say Kirk Heinrich is.
Kirk Heinrich didn't score like C.J. Watson in Atlanta. Look, pull up the numbers last year. When C.J. Watson was starting last year, who was the closer? C.J. Watson. I went to it. C.J. Watson was the one that was balling for them last year.
I would agree. Let's look at Kirk Heinrich. Let's start with Kirk Heinrich. He was a guy banged up, played 31 games last season. Actually played 48 games. Started 31 for the Hawks last season, averaged 6 points a game, 2 assists, 2 rebounds for Kirk Heinrich, but also a solid defender. And I think he's an upgrade over C.J. Watson. But let's look at C.J. Watson.
Over 6 points.
Let's look at C.J. Watson.
Look at C.J. Watson's numbers last year.
C.J. Watson, I would agree with you. C.J. Watson had a good season for the Chicago Bulls. He definitely had a good season, especially those games that Derrick Rose didn't play. C.J. Watson was big for them. He was big. There's no argument there.
What are his numbers?
C.J. Watson, let's get his numbers up. C.J. Watson last year for the Chicago Bulls, a big part of the Chicago Bulls last season, and he did some great. He did some work for the Bulls. I mean, he put up big time numbers for them in some big situations, especially a lot of times when Rose was gone. Let's look at C.J. Watson. He's now with the Brooklyn Nets, and C.J. Watson last season, looking at his numbers, 9 points a game, 9 points a game, 4 assists, 2 rebounds a game for C.J. Watson.
Yeah, but we're not averaging the games that Derrick wasn't there. When Derrick wasn't there, he was over double digits in points.
Let's look at him as a starter. As a starting guard, he averaged 11 points a game.
Thank you. 2 more points.
so you're going to give up 6 C.J. Watson is an upgrade for over Kirk Heinrich.
No, I don't think that's an upgrade. Not when you know what he can do as a starter.
Okay. I mean that's a fair point.
I think that's a good pickup for the Brooklyn Nets.
They
still have Lucas? Do they still have Lucas?
I don't believe they do have Lucas the third.
Did they let him go too?
Let me double check that.
They're gonna be in trouble. Do they think the Carlos Boozer is gonna step up for him this year? Is he gonna give him anything? Is that what they're depending on him? Because they're depending on him, it's not gonna happen.
I know they did bring in Marco Bellinelli, a guy that can definitely shoot the basketball. Marco Bellinelli could definitely stroke the basketball. And I think you're discounting Nate Robinson,
I'm not discounting anybody. This is my point. For what Derrick Rose was in and out of the lineup, the coach did a great job. I know the coach did a great job. But for what his players did for him, for what the bench did for Chicago, why would you break that up? Is the only point. I understand a Sheik's deal, but other than a Sheik, why would you break that up? And those guys played so good for Chicago last year. That bench and those guys played good together. They had great chemistry on the court together. I don't understand why you break that up. That's the only point I'm making here, Paul. You saying you break it up. You got Nate who's had some issues, some behavior issues. You got some other guys that, yeah, maybe, but you haven't coached them. So why break it all up? That's the only point I'm making. Because the Bulls had a great year throughout all of the injuries last year because their bench and their role players played great last year.
They did. Now, I know, definitely. I mean, the Bulls, it was amazing what Coach Tom Thibodeau did for those guys. They were the number one seeded team coming out of the Eastern Conference, record-wise. But
so would you break it all up?
If they had Derrick Rose, a healthy Derrick Rose, obviously they would have got out of the first round. And they probably would have beat the Boston Celtics as well. They probably would have got back to the Eastern Conference Finals.
So why break it up then?
Well, I mean, you're talking about Ronnie Brewer and C.J. Watson. I mean, I don't think those are game changers. I don't think there's game changers, and I think the replacements are comparable enough where you're not going to miss.
I don't think the replacements are game changers. They haven't been game. Heinrich hasn't been the player he was in the last year. Hey, we'll see. First of all, the Bulls won't be better than they were last year. I can guarantee you that. They won't be as good last year with Rose out the lineup. So we'll look at them with Rose out the lineup. Yeah, Nate Robinson's going to have some big games. He always does. But he also does stuff you don't like. So you bring the good and you bring the bad with Nate Robinson. Now, the only way the Bulls are going to step up and have a real good season is if Carlos Boozer averages somewhere close to 20-10. Carlos Boozer has to be the key to that success for that basketball team. If Carlos Boozer can give you around 20-10, then they'll be better. If he doesn't, which I don't expect he will, then they won't be that good.
No, he won't be 20-10, and I don't think it'll happen. He was 15-8 last season.
Well, he's got to give you somewhere close to 20-10. He's got to give you 18. His numbers have to go. What is Shaquille? Did you hear what Shaq said? When it comes time to step it up, you got to step your numbers up. He's got to give you at least 18-10 then. If he gave you 15-8, he's got to give you 18-10 next year.
Well, I mean, the last time he gave you a double-double, last time he gave you 20-10 was in 2008. So it's 4 years ago. He's not 20-10 anymore in his career.
Well, I think with Derrick Rose out the lineup, he's got to be 20-10 until he comes back.
I think Luol Deng is going to be big, keeping him healthy. He's had some health issues over the years. Keeping him healthy is going to be big.
I'd rather see a big man that has more impact on the middle with the boys be having a big year than a small forward. So, yeah, I think Dane can be healthy. It's going to be good. But I still don't agree with the way they broke the team up. That's just my personal opinion because I saw those guys play, and those guys played tough at home. I don't care who went up in there. You weren't going to beat the Bulls. Without Derrick Rose, you weren't going to go up there and beat the Bulls because they played hard for four quarters. They played hard the entire game.
And that game against the Heat this regular season, and to talking about C.J. Watson, where he went off in that game.
It was John Lucas that went off too. Remember?
He went off as well during the season. And I mean, I look at it this way. I think this team, the Bulls, they would have got to the second round if Noah was healthy. They would have beat the Sixers if Noah was healthy.
If Noah was healthy with those guys, they would have beat them. If Noah had been healthy,
yes, definitely. And if they had their full team, I don't think they would have beat the Heat. But I think they would at least beat the Celtics and gotten to the Eastern Conference Finals. They wouldn't have beat the Heat.
They would not have beat the Heat.
I think the Celtics probably.
All I'm saying, sometimes you get a team together with a group of guys that play well together and fit well together. And without Derrick Rose, those guys, if they had been healthy, they played well together. And they were playing hard for four quarters, and they were playing great team basketball. That's all I'm saying, Paul. I don't understand how you break it up. But if you're telling me what they lost and what they added was going to make them better, we'll see what happens. But you still got Korver there. You still got Korver there who can shoot it.
So Korver's gone.
He had some down games, but he played okay. But
Korver's gone. Korver's in Atlanta now.
Korver's gone too?
Yeah, Korver's in Atlanta now.
Oh, okay. Man, all right. I don't see how they're gonna be that good. I don't really see how they're gonna be that good, man.
I think they are gonna struggle. And there's a possibility that the Bulls may not even make the playoffs.
Well, were they cutting costs? Was the salary? I mean, what's going on?
I know the cap number was pretty high, and I know that's why they had to give rid of some guys. You got Boozer, Dang, and Rose all. I mean, Boozer's making 15 next year. Dang is making 13 next year,
yeah.
And then Derrick Rose is making 16. So you can't pay everybody.
Yeah, I got you, but
I think they won't be a top four seed next year. I would agree with you. Because if you look at the Mavericks, they were a team, a lot of their glue guys from a year ago, the Deshaun Stevensons, the Tyson Chandlers, the J.J. Barreas. I mean, those were key guys that they missed this year. They missed
those
guys.
And you don't.
Right.
Tyson Chandler, the big key guy that they picked up. And this is my point. When you have guys that fit together and play with chemistry, and Jason Terry is gone now, too. When you have guys that fit together and play with that chemistry together, you can't just exchange pieces and think it's all going to work out the way it did the year before. It doesn't work out like that, and we saw that happen with the Dallas Mavericks. First of all, Dirk didn't decide to play till after the mid-season anyway. He wasn't even ready to play the first half of the season. So that was another thing. You're a pro basketball player, and now you're not even ready to play. Lamar Odom never checked in with the team. And, Sean Marion and some of those guys played hard. You know, Jason Kidd's going to come play hard every night. You know, he's older, though. But my point was, you don't just exchange pieces and everything works out. And the chemistry the Bulls had with those guys was great last year. And first of all, since you're telling me all these guys are gone, it's going to take a while for these guys to even gel, let alone win basketball games. And then they're going to have to figure out who's going to be the, if Luau Deng's not, well, it's going to have to be Deng or Boozer. But when they're not doing it, who's going to be the one to step up and finish? Is it going to be Nate on some nights? Is it going to be Highway? Because some nights it's not going to be Dang or Boozer. It's got to be somebody else. And that's where you had C.J. Watson and you had Lucas III. Them suckers were playing great ball off of each other. And, they let four or five key guys off their roster go.
They did. I mean, and they did. But, you can't pay everybody. You also forgot Noah. Noah's a guy that's going to be – Noah's a big-time player.
He's not a scorer.
He's not a scorer, but he's a rebounder. He can block shots, and he can do all the dirty work. He can score a little bit. He's not all easy. He can score a little bit, and I forgot Noah's number. Noah's making $11 million next year.
So you got four guys making over $10 million. And I tell you, with the way they have that assembled now, they might be a 5-6 seed.
But I think they're the type of team with Derrick Rose coming back later in the year, mid-season possibly. With bringing him back, when he comes back, I think they're going to be a dangerous team.
They're going to be able to carry the full load like he's been doing.
Right. And, I mean, we'll see how soon he can come back and how fast he can come back and how good he'll be coming off an ACL injury. I mean, that's a big-time injury. We're not talking something small.
I'll tell you this. Usually when you come off ACL, especially in basketball, you're better the second year in than you were the first year in.
Right. It's a two-year injury pretty much. We'll see. We're talking to the newest member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame, Willie Rolfe. And Willie, last weekend, a great weekend for you, a great weekend for your family, and a great weekend for all the Hall of Famers up in Canton, Ohio. First of all, we talked about it last week. You didn't cry. We thought you were going to cry. But I thought there was one point that you were close. When they initially introduced you, it looked like as you waved to your family and whatnot in the crowd as well.
It
looked like you were close there at that point.
It was tough at the very – when you watched that video of my dad breaking down toward the end, a little bit at the end of the video, and then everybody standing up and you unveil that bus. It was tough. It was tough, but – I told you I was going to hold my composure, and I did, so I had to figure out you were a mistake then or something like that. But It was unbelievable, Paul, to be up on that stage with those, you know, and Paul, we talked about me not getting in last year, and a lot of people asked me the question. If I had to do it over, Paul, to go in with the group of guys I go in with, to miss a year to go in with my group, I'll take missing that year, Paul. Because I nothing against them other guys, and I know you got a few prima donnas or whatever, but I'm in with a blue-collar group from me to Curtis to the Monty Dawson, the nicest guy you want to meet, to Jack Butler, who, you know, had to wait 50 years to get in the hall, and Cortez. I went in with a special group, Paul, a down-to-earth blue-collar group, and we've already made a commitment because a lot of guys don't come back, and they tried to get a couple guys to talk from last year's group, and only one in the room, wasn't nobody really in the room. Michael Irvin got up and said a few things at the Red Niski luncheon, but, you know, we already made a commitment that we're going to come back and be there together, you know, because they fly you in every year for that. So I went in with a special group, Paul.
And you look, you talked about it. I mean, that seemed to be a lot of humble guys up there giving their speeches. So it was. You could tell that it was a down to earth group of guys. And your speech, a lot of interesting things coming out of your speech. And one thing that was interesting, your father, he talked about how after you left New Orleans, you spent 9 seasons with the Saints. You went to Kansas City, and he felt like that you really developed into a Hall of Famer in Kansas City. Talk about that.
Well, you know, I mean, when I went to Kansas City, you know, I was on a mission to come off that knee surgery, first of all. Second of all, I went to Kansas City, and I played on a better football team. You know, I played on a better line. And when I got there and realized it, you know, that was the finishing touches of the icing on my cake. So for that 4 years run that I had in Kansas City, I mean, as far as me playing and the numbers we put up and whatever, those were the best years of my career. The last 4 years of my – I think in 2008, the year we started 9-0, I only had one penalty the whole year. You know, we ran for yards and Trent threw for 4,000 yards for focus 4 straight years. So, you know, the 4 years in Kansas City – you know, me putting out on the edge, running and everything, were, I think, the best, you know, nothing against New Orleans, but the 4 years in Kansas City with those teams were the best years of my career.
And so you're saying essentially because you were able to play on a line that was better, that kind of helped you as well.
That helped me tremendously. And, you know, me playing with those lines, with us playing with the consistency we play with, and as hard as we came, and I said, we set the tone. We knew we were going out to set the tone. It didn't matter if we went to Jacksonville or went down to Temple when they had those good defense. We were still getting after them. So, I mean, we went out there and set the tone and played hard every week, and, you know, sometimes we gave it up at the end, and we didn't finish the job as far as our team. But we went out there and gave an effort, and, man, look at the numbers we put up. I mean, we were, you know, one of the top offenses. We led the league in first downs or yardage or, you know, pretty much every year we led them in something. I was right there leading it, almost everything. But, you know, it was run and pass. It wasn't a pass happy either. I mean, we were running and passing the ball. So it was just – you know, for me to end up in the situation I ended up in and to be on the offense putting up the numbers we were putting up and to play with the guys I played with, like I said, that I think that's what vaulted me to, you know, make it all pro a few more times and get into the Hall of Fame this early. Just like I talked to Richmond Webb, he came by my tent, and I always speak about how good a player he is. Richmond, 7-time Pro Bowler all decade, but he did it all with one team, played all his career mostly with, except for 1 year, I think, with the Miami Dolphins. And he hadn't made the finals list, and he went to 7 Pro Bowls and made an all-decade team. So if you just look at my resume strictly from New Orleans, it's pretty much what Richmond, you know, I got a couple of NFC linemen of the year trophies, and I got a to, you know, if I don't make another all-decade team if I don't go to Kansas City, Paul. I got two NFC linemen of the year trophies. I got an alumni lineman of the year trophy when I was in New Orleans. So I will say that I do have, you know, two linemen of the year and an alumni lineman of the year trophy, but I don't have the all-decade team, and I don't have a few more of the all-pros, and I don't have the four more Pro Bowls. So if you look at my resume and take Kansas City out of the equation, I'm not in the Hall right now, and I might not be in the Hall for a while.
And we saw the Saints players there, Drew Brees, and a lot of the other guys out there supporting your speech and everything. How much did that mean to you?
It was great. I mean, I knew they were going to be there, and just for the whole team to be there and showing the respect and honor to me, that just shows the Saints organization is going, and it's a lot. It's some history with the Saints organization. They got a Super Bowl ring. They got two Hall of Famers. I mean, you know, they're building something, you know, I'm glad I was a part of before they got the Super Bowl ring and before they got some of this. It started with Archie Manning, you know, way back in the day playing hard, and Archie giving all he had to the city of New Orleans and landing on the line for him and really in a bad situation. Then you had the teams in the 80s, you know, the later 80s and early 90s with Ricky Jackson and the Dome Patrol, and that's when they really started getting better and started, you know, people started talking about the Saints and getting excited about the football team, you know, all over the country. And then you had us struggling for most or close to 500 early in my career, starting 5-0, and then struggling through the mid-90s to the late 90s. And then us getting that big playoff win in 2000, and I was a part of that team. So, you know, I was a part of the building process that helped get that team the way it is now. And that is a playoff caliber team year in, year out now with Drew Brees there. So I'm just glad I was a part of that history. And, you know, I followed in behind the City Champ, you know, that's what they called him. Ricky Jackson was called City Champ in New Orleans because he is still the City Champ down there.
And your speech, and I think it went roughly around 10 minutes or so.
Yeah, I told you. I didn't cry? Because I had my speech organized. I had practiced it. You know, I had gone over it. I made sure I was looking up. I paused some. So you know, it was about, you know, double font big, but it was about 12 pages, and you know, I tried to go in there and talk about my high school, which my high school had a tradition, and a great tradition, and I don't know, Paul, if you can look this up, you know, I don't know how many high schools have two Hall of Famers from them, but we also have another Hall of Famer from my high school that played a long, long time ago, but he's still, you know, considered one of the top 10 players to play in the league, Don Hudson. And, you know, I wanted to talk about the guys I played against, you know, missing the battle, you know, talk about losing a Tech song. So, you know, I think I covered all the bases in there.
You did. You did a good job. You thanked your family, got your kids, and everybody. You thanked everybody. You did it. You did a good job. I mean, you definitely did a good job last weekend in Canton, Ohio, getting it done. And your father, and first of all, your father, and looking at him, looks like a guy that doesn't play in terms of you discipline. Seemed like a very disciplined man, and I think I'd be afraid to run afoul of your father, Clifton Rolfe. I mean, he seems like a guy that just really doesn't play and lays down the law. I mean,
he didn't just lay down the law. He you know, he warned us a few times. You know, my dad was a dad that he let you play around some and tell you to get out the house. Nah, if you kept doing what you were doing, you were going to get it. And he was going to tiptoe back there. You wouldn't think a big man that big and tiptoe, but he was going to tiptoe back there and get a hold of you sooner or later. But he was going to give you some chances to get out the house or to quiet down. And if you didn't do it, then he was coming. And we knew that.
and he said before your speech actually that you became his hero. I mean, that has to mean a lot to you.
Oh, it does. You know, my dad's football career was cut short, you know, because of injuries, and he kind of got a bad deal, had the whole dummies and trying to make him quit and, you know, different things that happened to him and he couldn't because he needed to get those grades and he needed to go on to dental school. And he had no other, you know, as far as monetarily, he wasn't going to, he didn't have, you know, he couldn't turn his family to help him financially, so he couldn't turn to anybody. So his support system was my mom's family who lived near Michigan State, and they really helped him a lot, you know, helped him feed him and put clothes and took him under their wing and took care of him once him and my mom got serious. So, you know, as far as football is concerned, you know, he went to Michigan State when they had a great program. So everybody who played for the Chiefs and some of these other guys that he played with, a lot of them went pro. And a lot of guys he saw, they were playing a lot, went pro. You know, so for him to be able to go up there and be on that stage at the Hall of Fame, and for him to know that all the guys, some of the guys that were playing in the 50s and the 60s knew who he was, especially the ones at Michigan State with him, for him to be able to be a part of that and be there. And, I mean, if it's Clifton Rolfe and you got Willie Rolfe in there, it's not going to take long for people to realize who his father and son are, or relatives. So, you know, we're that bus is not coming out of the Hall of Fame now, Paul, so he's in there too. I'm in there, he's in there.
And before you took off and saw the bus, before you took off the unveiled the bus, you and your father had a brief hug. What was he saying to you? It seemed like he was whispering something to you. Almost seemed like he was praying.
He wasn't whispering something to me. He might have been praying. I mean, my dad is very spiritual, and he thinks things happen for a reason. And I know he thinks to a certain point, you know, this happened for a reason. Man, it was just real touching, and we had a real good and big embrace at the jacket ceremony Friday night, and that was a longer one. So it was just real special, man. The whole family had a great time, and everybody got a chance to be a part of it. You know, Paul, now that I've gotten to know you, I know how proud you were that I was up there, now that we know each other. So, you know, it's just special that a lot of people got impacted by this and are happy. And like you said, if they ever want to see me, when I'm gone, you know, they know where to find me. I'll be over there in Canton, Ohio. So, I'm not going anywhere now.
And I saw the bus that was unveiled. It looked a little bit like Charles Oakley.
Well, they did the best they could, man. You know. I made sure they took a little off the cheeks when I was younger, man. Now, I said, look, man, y'all got to make me look a little younger. My face wasn't as big when I was younger. So just make sure you narrow me up a little bit and make it look when I was 25, 26, 28. So that was the main thing I was trying to do. But, no, I'm happy with the bus, and I'll get one here, too. So I look forward to getting mine and my two kids. My daughter just walked in right now. Carrington have been here all week. They got daddy running, so we've been hanging out, having a good time. And they start school next week in New Orleans, so I'll be taking them home Monday.
And we saw, you talked about in your speech, you named a few guys that you competed against, Willie McGinnis, Tim Harris, Sean Jones, Reggie White, to name a few. But there was a name that stood out to me, and I was surprised that you named him, and Mike Mamula. Mike Mamula, the Philadelphia Eagles. I'm a lifelong Eagles fan. I remember Mike Mamula. He was the guy back in the draft many years ago, a workout freak, and he went very high with the Eagles because of that workout and so on and so forth. But Mike Mamula gave you problems?
Mike Mamula, he was tough, man. Mike Mamula's rookie year, that first year or two, Mike Mamula was fast as heck. And Mike Mamula came in there and hit the quarterback and was giving me some fits. And I had Mike Mamula gave my hands full of Mike Mamula. And, you know, just a name like that. You know, I could have named Kevin Green or talked about some other guys, but, you know, Tim Harris, people don't know. Tim Harris was a hell of a football player, too.
Tim Harris was good. Tim Harris
was good. He played for Philly, too, didn't he?
Tim Harris did play in Philly.
He played in Philly, and he played for the 49ers. And Tim was a damn good football player, but Michael Mueller, man, was tough. And I remember he came in the league, what, 95?
95.
You know, somewhere around there. He came to New Orleans, man, and played us. And, he gave me some problems, man. He was coming. So, you know, I remember that game. So, like I said, Mike was a tough player. Now, I know he didn't have the long career that some other guys had, but, I mean, like you said, he had a hell of a workout, and he was a specimen, and he was fast. He was fast when he was coming out that corner. And I, like I said, I played against him his rookie year, but, yeah, he did give me some problems. Now, I played better against what's it called, too, when he had that great year. And I got after him a little bit. What's the guy that y'all had for the defensive end that y'all had that went to the Pro Bowl a few times?
Hugh Douglas.
Hugh Douglas. I played Hugh Douglas in 2000, and I got after him a little bit. So, you know, I played him in 2002, but he was tearing everybody up that year. But like I said, I was a young boy when I was playing against Mamuda, so, I mean, I just had to give my props to. I wanted to talk about some guys that people might not know about, you know.
Right.
And you know, it's not always the. My point was, Paul, you know, you can be having some good seasons, but it's not always the All Pros or the Pro Bowl guys that are gonna have some good games. And you know, sometimes you just run into a guy that's ready to play, and they go. You know, when you're a guy like me that's establishing stuff young in the league. Guys gonna come after you, so
definitely.
They're gonna come after you to make a name for themselves every week, and that's what they, you know, you have to get ready to deal with.
And you just mentioned your daughter, and you mentioned your kids in your speech, and you talked about the time away that football sometimes as a player you have time away from your family, and you miss out on some things. And it reminded me of, and I texted you this that last week, it reminded me of the Andy Reid situation this week with his son died at training camp with the Eagles this past week. And, you know, we talk to players, obviously, they give a lot to the game. But coaches, in terms of time, they give more time than the players. I mean, they sometimes sleep at the facilities and so on and so forth, and they miss out on a lot. Talk about the sacrifice. And you've been around a lot of coaches. Talk about the sacrifices that a coach makes.
Oh man, the coaches, they give up everything. And I know, it's just like remember Tony Dungy a few years back.
And I know
Andy Reid's thinking, you know, at some point, when did this kid turn and go the other way as far as with these pills, prescription pills, and doing drugs or whatever. And, you know, he, in the back of his mind, Paul, he's always going to be thinking, what if? What
right.
could I have done to make him go the right path? Because obviously, at the time of his death, you know, it was far gone. You know, the kid had been having some problems. But at some point, you know, when the kid was 12, 13, 14, you know, when was it a point where his, you know, He probably could have talked to his dad or needed his dad there more for him. And I know Andy Reid's going to have to think about that the rest of life. What could I have done to make the situation better between me and him?
I mean, it's tough. I mean, you want to be successful and obviously make as much money as possible for your family. But the time that the coaches give to the teams and everything. And Chris Carter said something that was very interesting this week. He said that pretty much the coaches know their players more than they know their own children. I mean, do you see that? Could you see that?
That's true. That football team is his children. Why do you think Andy Reid was trying to get back to work so bad? I mean, that football team and that network of being around that office and being around those people, that's his life. That's his routine. So that is his family. So, I mean,
right.
I mean that tells you how important it is to him and how much it means, how much that's his safety network to being around the guys, being back in the office. You know, that's his safety network. And I'm just sad that it's for his son. I know his son had a couple run-ins and had a couple, you know, he had some chances to try to get it together. I think I don't remember if they had tried to send that kid to rehab or
they,
to do
they,
something.
They did the rehab thing. They did a lot for him.
They did a lot. And we don't know what was the cause of death was, but obviously if you start mixing stuff up and putting it in your system, you know, the reaction you're gonna get is not gonna be the same. You can't You can't be mixing and doing stuff and putting all that in your, ingesting that, because you know, it's just sending your body in two different ways. And you know, like I said, this kid was only 29 years old.
Right.
You know, if he could have realized, you know, how special his life could have been, you know. But like you said, now he won't get a chance to, and it's just a tough deal. And hopefully the team can come around him. And I hope the Eagles have a special day this year. That's what I was.
And thinking. I know. You know, in terms of he's the coach and everything, but my thing is, after this year, I don't really know how difficult will it be for him to have to go back to the Eagles training camp each and every year, knowing that is the place where his son died. To me, that's got to be something that I don't know how he's going to do it. I mean, obviously he's going to do it.
Where was the kid at when it happened?
The kid died at the Eagles training camp. Tried at Lehigh University Eagles training camp. His son Garrett was did some work with the team. He was with the team in terms of strength and conditioning.
Oh, he was with the team.
An unofficial role with the team, but he died in Lehigh at the training camp.
Oh, he was with the team when he died. I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was with the team in training camp when he died.
What was he doing?
Well, he had an unofficial role with the team. He has been around the team for the past couple of years now. Doing some work with strength and conditioning.
Oh, I didn't know. Well, hold on. Something. Well, did the kid? I mean, did the kid have a problem? Had he done, you know, had he done something to his body part to make his body weaker? I mean, what?
Well, I mean, you know, he had some drug issues over the years, but I know at this point he was a few years clean. So, I mean, obviously, when you're going through situations with substance abuse, a lot of times, a big part of your recovery is relapse, and you know, I'm not there. There is no, you haven't heard the cause of death yet, but I mean, all indications are pointing towards that, but we don't know. But I mean, you know, it is what it is, I guess, in some respect. But it's sad. It's sad. Only 29 years old, and I guess over time, if you are doing, and I'm not saying he died of drugs, but if he did die of drugs, being that he had drug problems. You don't know if it just took a toll on his body. And it was just, you know.
So what you're saying, it basically like the Amy Winehouse deal. What you're saying is, let's say he had a problem and he had been clean, and then he decided to do something one night, and he wasn't used to doing it no more, and they just overloaded his system. Is what
right.
You're saying?
Right. It could have. I mean, we don't know. We don't know the cause of death at this point, but just judging by Andy Reid's statement and everything, I think you kind of get the idea of what happened. But, I mean, it's just – I mean, I don't know how Andy Reid can go back to the training facilities at Lehigh each and every year, go to training camp, and know – that's got to be tough. I don't think Andy Reid's going to coach again after this year. This is just my opinion. I don't think he's going to coach again after this year.
Now that you tell me that, see, I didn't know he was with the team at training camp. Well, I mean, at least he was there with his son and spending time with him every day, you know, and his son was up there with him. When he was there. So I will say that makes it more comforting for me to know that he was with his son when this happened. Now, what happened when he went back to the dorm one night, you know, was it some type of, Vicodin or some type of other thing he was drinking or, you know, what he was doing? Because if the kid had some problems, see, the problem is, if the kid had been in rehab and stuff, maybe the kid was taking some type of antidepressant or taking some type of other type of drug. That's the problem. They give you these antidepressants, they give you these other type of drugs, and then when you start mixing those type of drugs with Vicodin or with these other prescription drugs, you know, they can just slow your whole system down, Paul. And then if you're drinking or doing something else, see, that's where it's the problem. These guys don't know how all these drugs are going to react with each other. And that's what we need. That's what I think these pharmaceutical companies and these people need to let these people need to understand is, when you take this, and this, and then you mix that, what the reaction is going to be when you do all that. You know, and I think these guys are so used to doing some of this other stuff, and they start just throwing stuff, just throwing other pills on top of it, and they don't know what the reaction is going to be.
Right. No, I mean you're right, and it's just your speech kind of made me think about it because the amount of time that you have to spend away, especially coaches, the amount of time that they spend away from their families, it's almost like, I'm not going to say that, you know, the kids don't have a daddy, but what I'm saying is they're not getting the same type of attention that they would get from a guy who's working 9 to 5.
Okay, but then when you say he was at training camp with him, then he was with his dad now. Now, what I'm talking about is those early years before his son decided to go that way. But if his son was going to go that way, you know, we don't know if he's going to go that way anyway. But like you said, at least his son was at training camp with him, and they have been spending time together the last 2 years. Now, where's his other son now? How's he doing?
The other son, Brett, he's working for Temple University. He's doing work as a coach with Temple University. So he's doing better. He's doing good.
Okay.
And before this happened, it seemed like Garrett, his older son who died, 29 years old, the thoughts were that he was doing good as well. And he probably was doing well, but it just, you know, part of, you know, rehab and a part of this addiction is sometimes relapse. And that may have happened in this particular case. It's a sad situation. I know the kids have had issues over the years. I know back in 2007, Andy Reid stepped aside for a little bit, took a leave of absence. Both of his sons on the same day were arrested for drug-related incidents. So it's obviously a sad situation anytime a person dies young, and it's got to be a tough situation for Andy Reid. But to your point, because his football family, I mean, that's a big part of his family, that's a big part of him, and football, I believe, is that place, that refuge for him, and he's going back into his work, and hopefully the Eagles can respond. Michael Vick has dedicated the season to his son, so hopefully the Eagles can respond and have a big-time year. And Willie, going to you now and going back to the Hall of Fame, I mean, afterwards, you had loose ends at your party. How did they perform? How did everything go there?
They did good. I mean, the party was good. They were on there for about 90 minutes, and everybody enjoyed them and danced some. And it was a good time. The whole thing was a good time. And, you know, I just think that, you know, I look back on it, I think I walked away at the right time. I left the game, and like you see, you know, you see these guys now, and we talked about McNabb. We talked about McNabb now. I'm going back to football now. But look at all these guys sitting there that are just waiting for a phone call. And I don't know why McNabb would be sitting there waiting on a phone call, but, you know, you got Plaxico sitting there waiting. You got Cedric Benson sitting there waiting. You got some real good football players that are sitting waiting on a job. And
Benson just signed with the Packers. Just signed with the Packers yesterday.
Who did?
Cedric Benson.
Okay. All right. So he'll be there. Okay.
But Plaxico, like you said, Plaxico is waiting. McNabb is waiting. And a lot of guys are out here waiting to get picked up and waiting for another opportunity to play this game that they love. And you could have kept playing, but you decided to walk away. I mean.
Well, I was feeling like my body might not hold up for me the next year. You know, and I decided to walk away before. I didn't want to end my career like, you know, Orlando was in Chicago, or, you know, Walter. Some of these guys were hurt there last year, limping around. I just didn't want to end it. And I know as far as me with something torn, I mean, as far as, you know, breaking bones or something, no, that wasn't my problem. But, you know, I tore my hamstring, and, you know, I just didn't know, you know, how my body would hold up that last year. But, I mean, that was going into my 14th year. And, you know, it was a decision I made. And now looking at the situation I'm in and, you know, being in that, they have a new part of that museum, you know, on the wall at the Hall of Fame. And my mural's up there now. And, you know, with you go in that part of the new part of the Hall of Fame, Paul, and you look up there on that field, and you got Emmitt Smith, me, Joe Montana, and Howie Long sitting up on that mural on that wall that's not coming down. And I'm like, you know, maybe my decision to leave at this time might have been right because I ended up on that wall and on that mural.
I mean, hypothetically speaking, if you could, if you wanted to push it, how many more years could you have played?
Well, I mean, with the way they practice now, yeah, I could have kept playing, you know, but if they had cut back, but with the way Dick Vermeil was practicing, since, if he was going to keep doing it, it would have got ugly. Because, I mean, you know, when you're struggling, when you're beating yourself up at training camp and going into the season banged up, I mean, you got to go into the season feeling good, not beat up.
Right.
You know, but that was the mindset back when I first came in the league, too, was let's bang, 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 bang in camp. And then, you know, you start feeling better as the season goes on. But, you know, it's just that banging takes a toll on you. Now, the way they do it now, yeah, if I had been able to go to Kansas City and practice and have training camp the way they do now, I could have played, you know, from year 10 to probably 15, 16 years, but I didn't have a chance to go through the system what they're doing now.
Right. All in all, Willie, I mean, you had a great weekend, obviously, last year in Canton. How humbling was that whole weekend? Just it seemed like you guys were just getting wined and dined the whole weekend. How humbling was that whole weekend for you?
I mean, it was great. It was great. The whole weekend was great. They said that we were going to be busy. I didn't think I was that busy. I was happy to be there, great to be a part of it. When you got Forrest Gregg coming up to you telling you that he saw you play your rookie year and he thought you might have a chance to be in that group, you know, that just makes you feel special. You know, the old-time guys are telling you that they respected you and they like watching you play when you came in the league, and I end up there with Forrest Gregg. I mean, that might be the highlight of my weekend. You know, him telling me that and being there with those old school, old time players, and now, you know, I'm in that group, man. I'm in that a special group, and like you said, that's what it's all about. You go in there and you pay your respect, which we did, and now. I always be able to go back there and hang out with these guys every year.
And also real quickly now, the Saints, you saw the Saints up close and personal. You were around them, they were around you, you were at the game and so on and so forth. Do you see anything different? Sean Payton's not there. Do you see anything different about that team? Or will they be fine?
I think it's not that much different about the team because most of the coaching staff is all in except for Peyton and Greg Williams that's gone. I mean, maybe a couple of assistants. You know, Spagnuolo's the D coordinator, but pretty much it's the same guys. It's the same training staff, the same trainers, the same coaches, the same assistant coaches. So I think they'll be fine because pretty much most of that staff was the same ones. They're just going to miss Sean Payton being there with the team, you know. But I remember when Sean Payton wasn't coaching the team for a couple of games, they were still winning. So I think they're going to be fine, man, because it's the same group.
Right.
I mean, not a lot's changed. Other than Coach Payton not going to be on the sideline, it's the same coaches other than the D coordinator.
We'll see. I mean, we'll definitely see. I mean, they have the pieces there. I think – not having Sean Payton there is going to be big. I mean,
in certain game-type situations, when they get on the road in a tough game, yes, it will be big. And what's going to be tough is the division is tougher because they got some Max looking to have a big year. Cam Newton looking to have a big year in Carolina. We don't know what Tampa's going to be, but Tampa can be a dangerous team too. So, and they got some more weapons on offense with Vincent Jackson and those guys. So, yeah, it's a tough division they're in. So they're in a tough division, which makes the road tougher. But I think they still are a 10-win football team. But like you said, they are playing in a tough division.
Willie, pleasure talking to you, man. Wish you nothing but the best of luck. Look forward to having you on as the football season gets started and about to get underway. And greatly appreciate it, man. And enjoy your jacket and all that good stuff. You got the jacket on?
I
got to
go get it from the cleaners.
Anytime soon?
I got to go get it from the cleaners.
Oh, okay.
It's at the cleaners right now.
I hope you trust those cleaners. They might do something.
Well, no, I don't even know. They don't even probably know what the jacket is.
Okay.
You know most cleaners, you know, they don't. So.
Appreciate it.
All right, Paul.
All right. The great Willie Rowe. newest member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Good talking to him, catching up with him, and we actually talked more basketball than we did football, but great catching up with him. And I want to go back to that Andy Reid situation now for a second. Last week, it was discovered his son, Garrett Reed, 29 years old, discovered at Lehigh University, the training camp for the Philadelphia Eagles, discovered dead in his dorm room. Garrett, as we said, had some issues with substance abuse, had some jail time. And you look at his whole situation, I think it's sad, obviously, to see anybody 29 years old die. Let's get that out of the way now. And, you know, we talked about the sacrifices that coaches make, and they make a big-time sacrifice. And Andy Reid spent a lot of time at the practice facilities, spent a lot of time at the NovaCare Complex, the name of the practice facility for the Eagles, spent a lot of time with preparing game plans throughout the course of the week. And football, in terms of a coach, is a 12-year job, 12-month-a-year job. There's really no breaks. You go from the season, the end of the season, to the draft, free agency. I mean, it's really not a break from the draft, OTAs, mini camps, and into training camp and into the season. So where's the break? There's not many times for breaks. And so Andy Reid sacrifices a lot of time away from his family to do and coach the Philadelphia Eagles. That's what he does. That's what he does. And I just, you wonder, I mean, you wonder with his son, and this is all pure speculation, you wonder, he spent the time around the team. You wonder if that was an opportunity for his son to try to spend time around his daddy and to be around his father. Maybe that was his opportunity to spend time with his father, because he doesn't get that opportunity to spend time with his father. That opportunity, he doesn't get a lot of chance to spend with his father, because his father spends a lot of time working. If you're working 15, 16 hours, days, and then you're coming home, how much time do you have to give to your family? By that time, your kids maybe even sleep or you know. So how much time do you have to give to your family if you're giving all that to your job? And the kids, the coach's kids almost become his players, as Willie Rove talked about. He has 53 kids. He's in charge of them. Andy Reid has spent time as a GM as well. So, I mean, he's done a lot and for his ball club, to improve his ball club. But there is a sacrifice, and there is a consequence for that. It's a sacrifice for Andy, and there's a consequence for that sacrifice. That consequence is what you have in terms of missing time with your family. That's what you have. You have that consequence. The consequence is missing time with his family. I mean, it's sad. I mean, could it be his son tried to get time with his daddy, and that's why he took on what he took on, and that's why he was around the team, and that's why he wanted to take. He had an unofficial role, as you know, in terms of strength and conditioning. Maybe that was his reason to do that. I don't know. And that's just pure speculation on my part. But my heart truly goes out to Andy Reid. Anybody that has a child knows that they don't want to bury their children. They know that that's not something they want to do. And they know that's something they want to stay far, 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 far away from. So your heart truly goes out to Andy Reid. Definitely does. And you feel for him. You feel for his family. You feel for everybody. And I'm saying this. I don't know how Andy Reid can go back. This is just me. How difficult it would be to have to go back to Lehigh University, where his son was found dead in the dorm, to have to go back to that each and every year. And now, even having to go back to it now, how difficult that will be for him each and every year he's going back to Lehigh University. I think definitively, if the Philadelphia Eagles win a Super Bowl, I think Andy Reid retires. I really do. I think, you know, and a lot of people criticize whether or not he should have went back to coaching as soon as he did. I mean, grieving is a thing that is so individualized, and there's no right way, there is no wrong way to do it. You know, you do it the way you want to do it. Yeah, and if you feel like you need to go back to work, go back to work. If you feel like you need to stay at home, stay at home. I mean, whatever you feel like you need to do, ultimately you have to do it. And Andy Reid, that's what he did. He felt like he needed to go back to football, go back to his other kids, and those are his players. That's what he felt like he needed to do. He needed to go back to that. And it's sad, you know. It's just a sad situation. And in terms of whether the results of the toxicology report, that is going to take time. That could take weeks, according to some reports. So it's just a sad, 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 sad situation. Just a sad situation. His son, his children, Garrett and Britt, have had some run-ins with the law. They've had some issues over the years. But, I mean, the reality is Andy Reid, his children become his players. And I'm not. And Andy Reid was committed to his family, and all reports were he was committed to his family. All reports were he was trying to be involved and did everything in his power that he could to try to help his kids get on the right track. But, I mean, yes. You know, and who knows why certain things happen and what the reasons were behind the kids getting involved with drugs and getting into trouble. I mean, Garrett spent time as a drug dealer, and he said he had thorn his life, and he said he enjoyed that. You don't know, I mean, why kids turn to those type of things. Obviously, he didn't need the money. So it's obviously a rush type of thing. He just needed the rush. But also could be a cry for help, a cry for attention. You know, people sometimes act out to get attention. Kids act out to get attention. And I'm not saying that's the case here, but it could have been. But I don't think Andy Reid, especially if the Eagles win a Super Bowl, will go back. I think he will be done after this year. I really do. And you remember... you remember Tony Dungy many years ago where his son committed suicide. And you feel for these guys. You really do because, granted, I mean, the compensation is great as a coach. Obviously, it's a great living. If you make good money. You make the good money. You got a lot of money coming in. You got a lot of money coming in. And so your family's living good. Your family's living good. They definitely are living good. But Tony Dungy and his son, he committed suicide back in 2005. And it's a sad thing. It's a sad thing. I mean, it's sad, you know, I mean, it's a sad, sad thing. But the thing about it is you spend so much time as a coach. You give so much of yourself as a coach. It's just a part, you give so much of yourself. You give so much of yourself. So much of yourself. So much. And something has to suffer. There are consequences for that. Something has to give. But you just hope the Eagles, Andy Reid and everybody, you just hope Andy Reid and his family can heal, and that's going to take time. And you hope that Michael Vick can have a good season because he dedicated a season to Andy Reid's son. So you hope all those things can work out well for the Philadelphia Eagles. But, again, it has to be tough for Andy Reid and it just has to be tough. But, I mean, I think he's pouring all his energies into work and into making the Eagles a successful ball club. And as a lifelong Eagles fan, hopefully he can make that happen. Hopefully. Hopefully he can make that happen. But we shall see. And it's just, a sad, sad story. Tim Tebow and the New York Jets, they debuted last night. Tim Tebow. Not very effective in terms of throwing the football. Had a nice little run, but he wasn't effective throwing the football, and it's not surprising. Tim Tebow is what he is. 4 for 8 for 27 yards, including an interception. Tim Tebow is who he is. And this was against the second string. He is what he is. He is what he is. If you're expecting Tim Tebow to lead the league in passing yards, it's not going to happen. It's just not who he is. And just watching some of that game, I know the offensive line had some struggles. Sanchez really didn't have a lot of time in terms of throwing the football. And I know Tebow avoided some sacks himself. So, I mean, and Tebow was everywhere, playing on special teams and so on and so forth. I mean, I don't know. I mean, how relevant, I mean, how useful can Tim Tebow really be on the special teams? I mean, come on. In terms of the Wildcat offense, yes. And in terms of a backup quarterback, possibly. But in terms of a special teams player, how useful, how much of a benefit can Tim Tebow be to those units? I mean, how much of a benefit could he be to the team as a special teamer? I would say probably not much. In terms of the Wildcat offense, yes, he could be a big help there. And who knows, possibly as a backup or even a starter if Mark Sanchez falters. He could be of help there. But the Jets did have some issues in terms of protecting their quarterback. They didn't do a good job of protecting their quarterback. They really didn't. At all. At all. But Tim Tebow, not very effective. 4 for 8, 27 yards, including a pick. But he did have some nice runs. Did have some nice runs. Also in the preseason, we saw Michael Vick of the Philadelphia Eagles hurt his thumb. And Vick is a guy that's had a hard time staying healthy throughout the course of his career. And really, he really, really wanted to be healthy and stay healthy this season for the Eagles. He wanted to play a complete season. But with his style of play, you wonder how truly possible that is. I mean, how possible is it going to be for Michael Vick to play a complete season? I mean, that's going to be close to impossible, I think. Just judging by the way he plays the game, and it's going to be impossible. It's just going to be possible. Impossible. You know, it really is going to be impossible for Michael Vick to play a complete season. It's going to be impossible. He only did it one time back in the 2006 season where he played a complete season with the Atlanta Falcons. That was it. That was it. Other years, he's missed games. He's missed time. But, he's dedicated to sliding a little more. He's dedicated to being a little more cautious. He's dedicated to doing all those things. But the thing about it, he did get hurt while being in the pocket. So he got hurt by being in the pocket. That's a freak thing. It's truly a freak thing with Michael Vick. Hit his hands on this on the helmet of one of his linemen. So it's a freak situation. But you look at Michael Vick and you hope that he can stay healthy. If the Eagles have any chances of being the team that they want to be, Michael Vick has to stay healthy. He has to. He has to. Otherwise, the Eagles have no shot. And also, Peyton Manning made his debut for the Denver Broncos the other night. His first game in a long time, 19 months. 19 months, his first game in 19 months. Did throw for 44 yards and did have one drive, decent drive for the Denver Broncos. But Peyton Manning, he's back for the Denver Broncos. He's slinging that rock a little bit. And hopefully Peyton Manning can be successful. Hopefully Denver Broncos can be successful with Peyton Manning. Will they get as far as Denver Broncos did? Will the Denver Broncos get as far as they did with Tim Tebow? That's a question that has to be answered. Tim Tebow got the Broncos to the divisional round. Can Peyton Manning do the same? And a better season for the Denver Broncos would be the AFC title game. Can he do it? Can they do it? You look at what the Broncos have to work with, you would say automatically yes. Because one of their biggest issues and was in terms of Tim Tebow, in terms of playing teams like the Patriots and the Lions, teams that can put points up. Tim Tebow wasn't able to do it against the Patriots in the playoffs. The Patriots were very effective in that playoff against the Broncos. He moved the ball. Tom Brady moved the ball up and down the field on that ball club. Now, if they had a Peyton Manning, maybe Peyton Manning could shoot it out. With Tom Brady. Maybe Peyton Manning could shoot it out with Tom Brady. But you knew Tim Tebow didn't have a shot of doing that. You knew Tim Tebow didn't have a shot. And the Patriot defense was a better unit in those playoffs. They became a better unit down the stretch of during the, near the end of the season. They became a much better unit. So we'll see how successful Peyton Manning will be in the Denver Broncos. And I mean, it is the first preseason game, and it is what it is in a lot of ways. And fans and shouldn't really get overly excited about things. And it's the first preseason game. Let this process work out. The preseason is the preseason. And so let the process work out. Let's see what happens moving forward. My thing in terms of the preseason as a team, you just want to avoid injuries. Just do what you can to avoid injuries. Other than that, it is what it is. Just try to avoid injuries and possibly get better. But just, more importantly, try to avoid any type of injuries. Now, I want to move to the Saints bounty scandal now. There is a delay in the ruling for Jonathan Vilma, as he he's going up against Roger Goodell. He is going up against Roger Goodell. And we'll see what happens. We'll see if he can win. We'll see if Jonathan Vilma can beat Roger Goodell in the NFL. And there was reports earlier this week that the league, the NFL, was possibly going to have a deal for Jonathan Vilma where he was going to reduce the suspension from 16 games to 8 games. That was denied by the league, and obviously they didn't come to any type of settlement at this point. So, and it's looking like just reading the story and everything that the judge may go in favor of Jonathan Vilma. And the judge did ask all parties and urged all parties to try to come to some kind of agreement. I mean, I hope these suspensions will get reduced. If those reports are true, the league denies it. But if those reports are true, that the league was talking about reducing Vilma's suspension to 8 games, that looks bad for Roger Goodell. Because then at that point, you have to say this was an absolute rush to judgment. This is a rush to judgment. And so, and you're messing with guys' livelihood, especially Jonathan Vilma. A guy's going to miss 16 games and miss his salary. He's going to miss a year's worth of salary and a year's worth of playing. So, I mean, you can't get that back. You ain't getting that back. You're losing a year and you're losing money. And he has a wife to feed. He has kids to feed. He has a family. They got to eat, too. So, and I applaud Jonathan Vilma for fighting the league on this. I applaud him for fighting and standing up for himself and getting a lawyer and doing all these things to try to clear his name. This is a defamation lawsuit against Roger Goodell. He wants to get his name cleared. He wants to get his name cleared. And the judge in the case talked about how she felt that the league, the season-long suspension of Vilma was too much. This was too much. She called it excessive. She called it excessive. And she said she would rule in his favor if she had the jurisdiction. And I contend, and when talking about this whole situation this whole time, it's always been my thoughts and my belief that this issue should not have went to the players. These players should not have been suspended to begin with. Sean Payton, I'm okay with. You're part of the organization. You're head of the organization if this bounty program took place. Greg Williams, you're part of this organization. If this bounty program took place, I'm okay with your suspension. Mickey Loomis, if the bounty program took place and you're ahead of it, you're in charge of it, you're the lead of it, you deserve to be suspended. But the players are going with the system that's in place. The players are going with the system that is in place. So as far as I'm concerned, the players, in my mind, should never have been brought into this thing. The players should not have been suspended. I was always against the players getting suspended. And this also goes back to the situation with the Players Association, when they had an opportunity to appeal their situations to an independent arbitrator, they didn't have that opportunity. Because of the Players Association, when they had a chance to collectively bargain this thing, gave Roger Goodell and kept the power in the hands of Roger Goodell. So he's a judge, a jury, and executioner. Not only does he hear your case, but he hears your appeal. So what changes? What changes? You know what I mean? And you don't want to give that much power to one person. I think that's where the distrust and the disconnect between the players and the commissioner, that's where it happens. Drew Brees talked about there's a distrust for the commissioner. I mean, that's when these things happen. Because when you give power, a lot of power to one person, ultimately there is going to be distrust. Because if the President of the United States was the only one that had power and everything had to go through him, everything had to go through him, no one else but him. I mean, and he goes against you and he does this, that, or what have you, but he's the only person that has say in the matter. That wouldn't be a good situation. You just look at it from any standpoint. It's not good to give power to just one person. If Roger Goodell makes a decision on a particular punishment, that punishment should be able to be appealed to someone else. Someone else should be an independent voice with obviously no bias towards any side needs to be able to hear the case. Roger Goodell should not be the only one. Roger Goodell should not be the judge, the jury, and the executioner. That's the role that he plays. Goodell is what some players have called him. And that's what happens. He becomes a godlike figure because he has all the power. He decides who plays and who doesn't play. And if he makes a decision on you, you got to appeal it to him. So, I mean, ultimately, you don't want to see that happen. And you want to see whether or not you want to see if or whether or not this whole thing will be overturned. I hope it does. I would love for this whole thing to be overturned. I would really love for it to happen. And also, you look around, and I want to switch gears to college football. Tyrann Mathieu, I should say, of LSU, well, formerly of LSU, as he was dismissed from the ball game, not from the ball game, from the team. All reports were it was a drug violation. I know he's had issues with substance abuse in the past. Got suspended one game last season from LSU for substance abuse issues. And you wonder what it was. I mean, in terms of any type of substance that he's abusing is bad. And more than likely, it's marijuana. It's marijuana. And so, I mean, if smoking a joint means that much to you, if smoking a joint means that much to Tyrann Mathieu, if it means that much to him, then, I mean, so be it. So be it. So be it. He failed a drug test, and whether it's weed or any type of drug, if it means that much to you, then knock yourself out. But, I mean, you're messing with your money here because now in terms of you, granted, you're looking to transfer somewhere, but in terms of teams are going to have questions for you. And you could be a top five, top ten type of pick. And now, because you run afoul in terms of violating the substance abuse policy at LSU, because you're violating that, you now are putting yourself in a position where you're affecting your money down the line. Owners and GMs realize that Roger Goodell's NFL, that you got to be a good person off the field. You got to be just as good off the field as you got to be on the field. So this whole situation Matthew needs to get this right. Tyran, Honey Badger, I should say. I'm just going to call him Honey Badger. Honey Badger needs to get this right. Honey Badger, get this thing right, player. You got to get this right, player. I mean, come on. If smoking a joint, if doing any type of drugs, illegal substance, means that much to you, if it means that much to you, if it means that much to you, then I don't know what to tell you. I really don't know what to tell you. I mean, this guy's an electrifying player. He's made a lot of plays for LSU last year and put himself in terms of in position to possibly win the Heisman. He's a Heisman favorite going into this year. Honey Badger, what are you thinking? Honey Badger, what are you thinking? That stinking thinking has gotten Honey Badger in a lot of trouble. Gotten into a lot of trouble. And you hope that he can get this thing right, turn this thing around, turn his life around for that matter. Because really no excuse. Really no excuse. How many chances do you expect to get? How many chances do you expect to get? How many chances do you expect to get in life? You only get so many opportunities in life. And you got to make the best of it. Honey Badger is not making the best of this opportunity at LSU. He messed this opportunity up. But there's going to be more opportunities. If he's talented, and he is a talented player, and if he continues to make plays the way he's been making plays in his career, then guess what? There's going to be a place for Honey Badger. Honey Badger will have an opportunity if he continues. If he continues to be able to make plays, he'll have an opportunity. He'll have a chance. He'll definitely have a chance, and that's all you can ask for in this life, a chance. He messed up the first chance at LSU, first couple chances, I should say, at LSU. Now, let's see if he can turn around. Let's see if he can turn this thing around. You only get so many opportunities in life, and you hope that Honey Badger, can take advantage of his next opportunity, whether that'll be at McNeese State. Reports are he's looking at that. McNeese State is an option for him. We'll see. We'll see. He's also considering Jackson State, Prairie View, A&M. We'll see. But he says he wants to leave Baton Rouge. He wants to leave Louisiana, and judging by some of the things that's going on in his life, probably not a bad idea. Sometimes in order to make change, you have to change your environment, change the people you hang out with. And it's probably not a bad idea for him to try to go far, far away from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Probably a good idea for him to do that. Hopefully he will. Hopefully he will. But you do feel bad for him and everything. You just hope that he can turn it around and get another opportunity. But more importantly, you hope he takes advantage of a second, third, fourth, fifth opportunity that he's going to be getting. Hopefully he can take advantage of it. That's the more important thing. It's one thing to get the opportunity. It's another to take advantage of it. Hopefully Honey Badger can do that. Hopefully Honey Badger will do that. We shall see. We shall see. Honey Badger, get it right. Honey Badger, get it right. We want to thank Willie Rowe for stopping by. Willie, it was great talking to him about his Hall of Fame last week. And it was great talking to him, and he had a great time, obviously. He's immortalized. He's immortalized, and life is great for Willie Rowe. We want to thank him for stopping by and joining us today. You can listen to this show and other shows at blogtalkradio.com/pgan, where you can listen to this show and other great, great shows. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at Go4Gann. Also, look us up on Facebook at Paul Gann and friend me there. Got a great page there. Got a lot of great things going on. Our YouTube page is getting built as well. Building that up. Putting on some great interviews that we've done over the past couple of years. We had a lot of them. So check us out on YouTube. Go4Gann there on YouTube. So follow us on Twitter at Go4Gann. Look us up on YouTube at Go4Gann. And listen to this show and other great shows at blogtalkradio.com/pgann. For everybody here at Go4, have a great week. See you later. Bye.